Blog Talk Radio.
If I speak for your followers, and I speak for your ex-followers, and I speak for the curious outsiders looking in, and you remain silent in the shadows and don't let your balls drop enough to come out and say something, then I say, who do you speak for, Mr. Miscavige?
Anything on earth that says, don't listen to your mum and dad, don't talk to your mum and dad, that's bad.
Yep.
Wrong.
I remember sitting there wishing I could just scream out loud and beg for help. But I knew if I did that, I would never see Mark again.
This is the thing about real life. You can't experience the great things without the bad things.
I felt like it would probably be better off if we didn't exist. And, came up with a plan on how to end it.
He talks about a seven-year-old child.
Mm-hmm.
Even if he's referring to actually an adult. So let's say we change that to an adult. Okay, the woman shudders because the man keeps even passionately. The fact is that he shudders.
To do a big apology to me and give me my kids back.
I'm still shocked by the evil. Yes, even to this day. When I see a video of a former friend or family member, I'm like, this is pure evil at work.
All right, welcome to another Come Get Some Extra Scientology edition this week with the returning after 1 year of starting this whole thing with him himself, Chris Shelton. Before I get started, I just want to clear the air about something. I just want to address the ever-rising flood of shit in the room. There was some programming changes made to this podcast recently, and there's a lot of stuff being said that aren't true, things being said that aren't true. And let me just clarify without getting into it, because I really don't want to get into it. And it'll get changed around, and I'll get trashed on social media, and that's fine. The fact is, I will never condone anyone, for any reason, shaming or making someone feel bad or calling someone a liar for telling their story of sexual assault. That is not okay. It will never be okay, and I'll never condone that. That being said, I did offer to reverse the programming changes as was asked not to, and I'm just respecting those wishes. Otherwise, if you have any questions about any program changes in this podcast, feel free to reach out to me directly at cgshere@gmail.com, or you can hit me up on Twitter at Miami6Man or at CGS_extra. That may be the only way you get the fucking truth, and that is the absolute truth. But that being said, let's go ahead and get into Chris Shelton returning after 1 year. Here we go. All right, today I got returning to the show roughly a year ago. Chris Shelton was my first guest for the Come Get Some Extra movement, if you want to call it a movement, but the show I do here to expose the abuses of Scientology and help people put their voices out there and have another platform to tell their stories. Welcome back to the show, Chris Shelton.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Last time we talked, we had a pretty good time. We enjoyed our conversation, so I figured we'd have another enjoyable one.
Always enjoyable to, talk Scientology abuses and be them from that.
That's always fun. But we have fun the best we can with it, The sad and the bad of it are still there. They don't go away, but we need to laugh.
That's right.
I want to start off with this question, Chris Shelton. How can people be so stupid as to fall for the joining Scientology?
Great question. Yeah, funny.
You know why I asked that, of course.
Of course. I just posted a video today while we're recording this today. On Thursday here, to answer that exact question. And it is funny how did people approach the question and answer it and deal with it. Because you can't tell, sometimes the way the question's worded, you can't really tell whether a person is sincerely asking or whether they're in a rhetoric with some kind of snub.
Right.
Or condescending sort of thing, right? And I've seen both. And unfortunately, some of the condescending ones get pretty bad. I mean, they're pretty arrogant about it. And that is unfortunate because it indicates that they are, sort of asking that. Well, you know, all questions are asked out of ignorance. So it's not, you know, I don't want to.
Absolutely.
You know, misposition this. I mean, of course they are ignorant about it to ask such a question. But I mean that more as a bit of a slur, of course. You know what I mean? Ignorant boob, you know. What does he know?
Right.
But it is true, you know, that your ignorance really is showing. And really, though, it's kind of more of your snobbery is showing when you ask that question in a condescending way, because it states that you really don't have a lot of compassion for the people who were abused. You know, you're talking about people coming out of like Scientology, and you're talking about an abusive relationship. So,
right.
So to condescend to those people certainly isn't helping advance the conversation, put it that way.
Well, you say, use the word ignorance, and there's a lot of reality to that. I got a weird echo going, don't I? Okay.
Hmm.
You hear it, or is it just me hearing it?
I think it's just you hearing it.
Okay, good. Well, I'll hope for the best with this. Wow, this is really bad. Okay. All right. That's better. So, the thing with that is, I also think it's twofold. Like, I can't imagine ever asking that question that way. I've asked stupid questions. We've all, the first time we try to learn about the subject, we ask stupid questions. And I think I may have asked, I had to have asked at one point or another, like, how take me through how you would fall for that, or how did you not see that? That's one way of asking, but I can't imagine using the words dumb or stupid, and I do see that quite a bit in the forums.
That's right.
And that's the key.
The unfortunate thing when they can't seem to contain their arrogance, and that's why it's unfortunate, because it's not, I called my video when I talked about this today, I actually said it was the stupidest and smartest question you can ask.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's stupid when you're being, you know, a dick about it, but it's a smart question if you really are asking and you're really curious, why could somebody fall for what is obviously, or appears to now be obviously, total nonsense? You know, total bullshit, right? How could you fall for this? And of course, the answer is almost routinely, we didn't know what you know now. Of course, we fell for it because we're not stupid. We just didn't know all the things we know now that our experience and our research has shown us. Because we didn't do that. We didn't have that experience, and we didn't do that research. And now, the internet, of course, it's 10 seconds, and you have all the truth on Scientology that you could possibly want, right? But in 1995, when I joined the Sea Org, or in 1985, when I first into a church of Scientology, there was no internet. There was no ability to get this information easily. You know?
Right.
So you can be judgy about it, I suppose, and asking a question like that. But if you really want to know, then you're going to get an answer. If you really dig into the details of it, you find out quite a bit about psychology, undue influence, propaganda techniques, you know, mind control or manipulation, language manipulation. I mean, there's so many factors you learn about in seeking an honest answer to the question of how is it people fall for this. And I find that approach fascinating, and
yeah,
the answers you find absolutely fascinating. And that's why it's actually the smartest question you can ask. Gets right down into that right away if you're honestly looking for an answer.
Yeah, what I find interesting about it, as we talked about it earlier, was you just kind of laid it out in Scientology terms. And I know something, not just before even we talked today, beyond that, I've seen you mention it in passing on Facebook, and in some of your videos you kind of allude to it, that this kind of influence that people don't understand or trying to understand and think you got to be crazy to fall for exists in all walks of life.
Oh, yes. All walks of life. There actually isn't any area that's immune from it. When you clarify what a cult is and you separate it from the belief system or the odd, kooky practices that cult members can sometimes engage in, start seeing a cult is actually, a destructive cult is actually an abusive relationship. Whether it's 2 people or 2,000 people or 2 million people, you have a leader, or, you know, somebody that is being listened to, an authority figure or figures, and you have followers. And you have to have both ends in order for the thing to work, right? You can't, you know, a destructive cult standing on a street corner, you know, yelling in the air, no one cares, right?
Right.
He has to have followers. He has to have somebody that is listening to him or her. And that is that relationship, the abusive aspects of that relationship, the fact that the authority figure demands allegiance, demands loyalty, puts information control in place where the followers can only listen to him and can't listen to anybody else, right? I say him generically here. It could be a woman just as easily. But
yeah.
These various techniques that fall into place that are used to establish and define the relationship in very specific ways, right? You must listen to me. You must not listen to anybody else. What I say is truth. What everybody else says is some degree not truth, right? We, in our little group, whether, again, it's 2 or 2 million, we're the special ones. We're the, enlightened ones.
Yeah.
We're the ones who know more than the other people who are not part of our group. These are just some of the characteristics of it. But you'll notice that these can exist. What I'm talking about here, none of this relies on the specific practices or beliefs that are involved. So it could be religious in nature, be a sports group.
Yeah.
You know, a baseball coach could easily turn his baseball team into little cults by using these methods. If the baseball coach was an authoritarian figure, demanded these things from players, then you could have a cult in a little baseball team. Right?
Yep.
How easy this is. And we tend to not look at all aspects of society and influence that various groups that we're all part of have on us, you know, because we can look at an extreme group like Scientology and go, well, it's obvious. L. Ron Hubbard, you know, and David Miscavige, and, you know, they're mega billions and da 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 da, and you can, and the RPS, Sea Org, and I mean, this is pretty blatantly in your face.
Right.
There's something weird going on with this thing, right? But, you know, your local martial arts could be run with very similar techniques, and you might wander into that thinking you're going to learn about martial arts, and a year later your whole life revolves around this class, and you didn't go into it thinking that's what you wanted or that's what you were going to get into or that's what was going to happen, yet there it is, right? So
yes,
this can happen in all different walks of life, and we see indicators or symptoms of it, characteristics of it, in lots of different groups, political forums and groups, you see tons of it, or as well as religious groups, but it's not limited to those kinds of things, I guess is my point. And I wish there was more awareness of this, because I think this is a very important part of all of us can live our lives a bit further and a bit better.
Right.
And a bit more independently, you know, if we were aware of this. So I think that's a good point. Yeah.
No, definitely. I mean, I was just thinking about this, and I was thinking about it at the time too. One of my first and most my first really deep conversation with someone about abuse was a woman who was in an abusive relationship that I did for the podcast about abusive relationships. And I immediately, like, I had just come off the interview with Kathy Schenkelberg, and I immediately drew that connection that is very similar. And I think what you're saying goes a long way towards making it clear that the stigma of cult is a big part of the problem with people understanding and people, you know, wanting to help and get involved and people wanting to be a part of stopping these abuses. Because when you see a woman being abused by her boyfriend, or vice versa, or however it may go, you want to help that poor person. They need help. If you see someone in a cult, there's a stigma. It's like, oh, well, they're crazy cult people. No, that's not how it works. And I've been going, you know, bonkers for a year trying to get people to see that.
That's very true. It's a very good point you're making, because it you know, you can look at former cult members or people who managed to escape, get out of these kind of situations, and you can point fingers and laugh or ridicule or somehow feel that you're, you know, better than or different from, or, you know, you would never fall for such a thing. But it's a real skewed idea. That's just not reality. You know, people who join cults are regular people, just like you and me, right?
Right.
I mean, here I am.
As regular as we are.
You know, like, there you go, right? Just people are people. You know, they get fooled, they get conned by things, they have hopes and desires and dreams and ambitions, and sometimes people can play on those hopes and dreams and ambitions in a really mean, you know, horrible way. And really, when you're looking at cult survivors, you're looking at people who were, you know, who suffered such an experience and got away from that. But that doesn't make them substandard people.
Right, right.
Or damaged goods, even. They're just people who had a very unfortunate experience.
Right.
And maybe that experience defined their whole life, in which case they've got some work to do to come back from that. Or maybe they only had a brief brush with it, and so they didn't get, the claws didn't get pulled into their head, you know, and so they can move on more easily. Everybody's different, you know, but the idea that it can't happen to you, and people need to move on from that kind of thinking, and recognize again that can happen in all different walks of life, and that, I think, that is a point that gets missed too often.
You know, it's weird, because I've used the terminology before. The terminology exists. The term exists, cult mentality. Cult mentality.
Yeah.
Maybe you and I and a bunch of us need to get together and do a think tank and find a new word for this kind of manipulation to make it something that's universal, that can really bring a balance to the conversation.
It's a struggle. It's something that a lot of people over the years have struggled with, is the terminology of this. Because you originally, in the 1950s, you had, you know, Robert Lifton writes about thought reform, and out of this, you know, the Red Scare of the 1950s, you had brainwashing, right? This idea of brainwashing. Very general, generic sort of, what does that mean, term, right? Totalism was another term that Robert Lifton used when he was first studying this. Then you get undue influence, right? Hypnotism, mind control. I mean, there's so many different words or phrases that get thrown around for this. And, you know, and of course, just more generic terms like deception, deceit, lying, you know, that kind of thing. So it's something a lot of people have struggled with, is how do we, even the word cult, and destructive cult, and I take care to try to use the term destructive cult, because I'm trying to differentiate from a regular dictionary definition of just any group that has, you know, some belief system, right?
Right.
Even that word, though, cult, is a very contentious word. I mean, there are academics who refuse to use it, and they've, you know, gone into apologetics, even, where they start describing, like, Scientology as a religious movement.
Mm. Yeah.
Which makes it sound very generic and very non-threatening, very, you know, oh, it's just something that's not fully understood by the general public. And, you know, and a former member like me looks at that and I just go, you're somewhere where you really need to come out, because that's not,
right.
That's not what the result is, you know. But I understand the struggle that the academics, I've read quite a bit of their work, and I understand the struggle that they face, not ever having been a member of a group like this, not understanding the control techniques. They buy into the idea that it's a religious practice, like Scientology, for example, right? Or,
right.
No, it's just a club. What's the big deal? I could, you know, maybe referring to one of those, you know, like that martial arts group, right? And they don't think that there are control techniques or methods or propaganda techniques or anything like this. There's, you know, you go all the way out to there is no such thing as cult at all, and it's all just everybody's individual problem, to, you know, the other end of the extreme could be the individual has no responsibility for it of any kind, and it was, you're totally nothing but a victim, and the group is just evil and horrible, and, you know, at this end, there's no good of any kind in it. I mean, you can go to either end of the pendulum, but really the truth is kind of more, most things, it's kind of more in the middle, you know?
Right. I'll say along the same lines of all this discussion, you know, I see these stupid questions asked. You know, we call them stupid questions. There's no stupid questions, but the questions about, you know, where's John blank? David Miscavige's wife, Shelley. Where's Shelley? You know, you see that one, like every other post, you see, where's Shelley, and what do you think Tom Cruise is thinking? Is Tom Cruise seeing Siri? Things like that. And, yeah. You know, these questions, what I like to try to remember is, because I do see ex-Scientologists sometimes get angry and frustrated and maybe go on the defensive or on the offensive a little bit, like, do some research, and it's important to remember there are those, that segment of population who are genuinely curious, genuinely interested in knowing, haven't seen the question asked yet, and that's going to happen.
That's exactly right. It's a little bit of a front line sometimes. You know, we want to, you know, the whole effort of the anti-Scientology movement or ex-Scientology community or whatever you want to call it, the common denominator, despite many disagreements that we have with each other or problems that sometimes come up between people, the common denominator is we oppose Scientology's authoritarian and abusive practices. Really, this, you know, you could pretty much, I think that would be a pretty universally agreed upon statement, which is hard to get universally agreed upon statements, but
right.
But I think that one would be about as close as you could get, right? Because, for example, not everybody in the ex-Scientology world wants to destroy the Church of Scientology.
Right.
They want to reform it. They want to change it. They don't want to see it disappear because they feel that there were so many good things that they got out of it that they want to preserve those things. Well, I don't particularly share that point of view, but I understand it. So, you know, but I think both of us, you know, that somebody with that point of view and myself would think, would agree that we want the abuses to end.
Right.
And so we're trying to raise awareness that these abuses and that they exist and that this is real and that there are people who fall into this and that they're still stuck in it. And so our efforts to bring that awareness, well, you really can only do that by talking to people, you know, bringing the information out there through videos or books or magazines or media, and then answering their questions, because people come and they have all kinds of questions, and they come from all different walks of life and all different backgrounds and different levels of intelligence, different levels of education. Sometimes people come and they honestly ask questions that sound offensive or sound very stupid, just because they just don't know, and they're honestly asking.
Right.
And then there are people who condescend and get arrogant and get kind of weird and have a superiority complex. And those, you know, you try to weed that out, but it sometimes is a difficult process.
Right.
So it's always a bit of a struggle for us on social media to, one, answer the same questions over and over and over again. That can be, that gets tiring sometimes. And discerning the intention, you know, the intent behind the people who are asking questions, right? Sometimes it's not obvious.
Right.
So those are our struggles as former members who are now advocating against it, is we want to get this information out there. We want as many people on board with us as we can get. We want as much support as we can get in this. Yet at the same time, it's a little tiring sometimes an activist. You know, it's really
right. It's understandable. I mean, one thing that happens, though, when there is that backlash, when there is that frustration, when somebody's having a bad day or something and they react and snap back, Sometimes it causes a ripple effect, and what I mean by that is I've actually had people recently, after witnessing some of that snapback, come to me personally and say, I'm a never end that's been, you know, that's been fighting abuses of Scientology and very involved for a year now, just like I have. Do you think we need to back off? Are we unwanted? Do they want their own voices? And, you know, obviously you all have your own voices, but the question is, you know, it seems like we're unwanted or unneeded. Maybe we're in the way of this fight. Should we step out? And honestly, it's a hard question for me to answer because I found myself questioning that many times recently as well.
And I understand because it's a difficult, you know, when you, there's analogies I can make here, and all of them are somewhat awkward, because I could be easily misconstrued or misunderstood, and
right.
have been in the past with this, and so I'm careful in how I choose words on this, and still, I'm probably going to make mistakes with it, but I'll give it my best shot.
Okay,
here, right?
We can always edit.
yeah, well, fair enough. You know, the thing about a destructive cult situation is it's an abusive relationship, and as with any abusive relationship, abuse can be not only physical, but emotional, psychological, right?
Right.
And so the scars are not always easily visible. The damage is not always easily visible. People can look and sound like they are in perfectly good shape and be complete, you know, marshmallows inside and quivering masses of just waves, trying to figure out what way is up, where should they go in their life now, what's real, what's not, what do I believe anymore. I mean, there's a lot of things you have to sort through if you come out of an experience like that after years of being involved.
Mm-hmm.
So somebody can look and act like everything's fine and normal and that sort of thing, and they're very sequitur and they're very intelligent. And I'm not tracking from any of that. It's saying that they are also potentially have some damage that they're recovering from, right? Which is not to say that they're mentally ill or that there is something wrong with them or
right.
that they are damaged goods. You know, these can be, like I said, these words are difficult because they can be so easily misconstrued as
sure.
insulting or offensive when I'm a survivor myself. I, you know,
right.
I'm not engaging in self-flagellation here to say some recovery order, you know.
Right.
And that I have to learn quite a bit. I came out of this group over the last 5 years. I've learned a tremendous amount, and my mind has changed numbers of times about my experience. Right. So if you would have talked to me 5 years ago, 4 years ago, when I first started speaking out, we would be having a very different conversation than we're having today.
Wow.
Merely because of the time, the experience, the education, right, the catharsis of me speaking out and what that's done for me all by itself. You know, you have very, it would be a very different experience. And so my point is that people who are never involved want to help, and that is beautiful. It is a pure, wonderful, beautiful thing that I always, always want to encourage. But you got to realize that you're stepping foot into a bit of a minefield.
Right.
Because you're talking to a number of people, all of whom are different, all of whom had very different experiences, potentially, within Scientology, even though there's one bridge to total freedom, one C organization, one set of policies. So it seems like everybody kind of have the same experience, but when you drill down into the details, you find out, no, everybody's experience was very unique to them. And you don't know, when you're talking to one X or another, what you're dealing with.
Mm.
Some are more damaged than others. Some had more tougher experiences than others, really saying the same thing. When I say damaged, I mean they had a tougher time. They went through more bullshit. You know?
Right, right.
Some people went through some really serious physical abuse. Others had no physical abuse, but they had all kinds of psychological manipulation and nonsense done with them. Emotional blackmail, financial regulation, you know, information control. I mean, there are very, very serious things these groups set up to that mess with people's heads. And you don't know from one person to the next what you're dealing with until you talk to that individual and get their whole story and find out what's what. So this is the potential mind field that you can step into when you go into this community. Set off the mind inadvertently, not because you meant to, not because you had an evil intention to do so.
Right.
You know, you just said the wrong triggering word for some person, and they go, or they misunderstand your intentions or misconstrue what you're saying. You know, here you are honestly trying to help or trying to offer support or emotional backup or whatever, reassurances, and the person takes it the wrong way, and then, you know, they get offended, they lash out. You know, you as a never-end feel like, ooh, gosh, I did something really horrible. Well, maybe you did, or maybe that particular individual you were dealing with just had a particular problem that you triggered. Me?
Right.
Whereas if you had said that same thing to me, or, I don't know, you know, whoever, maybe you wouldn't have gotten that response or that reaction. Maybe what you did was wholly appropriate and completely good thing to do, except for that person.
Right.
Or that particular circumstance, or whatever, right? Because you're entering into an area also as a never-end where there's vast array of terminology and experience and rules and guidelines and thought processes and stuff that go on with Scientology, let's say. This really applies to any of these groups, but specifically, let's say, Scientology. Where they are approaching, you know, their view of life and how things are and how the world should work and all that sort of thing are very, very different from, say, somebody who was raised in a Christian household.
Right.
You know? So here's the good Christian coming along, wanting to, you know, has a good sense of community, has a sense of a higher power that offers some reassurance and meaning in a person's life, has the idea of eternal salvation through Christ or something, right? And is well-intentioned, well-meaning person, want to help, right? But they're entering into this minefield that has a wholly different worldview, completely different belief system, utterly different values, right?
And
if they don't know about those things, or at least a little bit of them, at least if they're not even aware of the fact that those differences exist, then they could end up saying something that will trigger the former cult member in a way that they didn't expect, didn't see coming. And then things can escalate unbelievably quickly, especially on social media, where they're not even face-to-face, but they're dealing with each other on a Facebook forum or something.
Right, you always got a keyword.
Yeah, because social media, I mean, we could do an entire podcast just on the
oh my God.
Of social media.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So that in itself, even when you take the cult variable out of the picture, people still get at each other's throats
on
social media over the stupidest things, right?
Yes.
So the forum matters also, and a lot of this work that we do, a lot of the activism that happens with Scientology happens on social media. So that itself, the medium itself, lends itself to escalating situations that quickly go out of control because people don't understand each other. You know, you could trace it back always to some stupid misunderstanding.
God, that sounds about right.
And in person, that could have been sorted out.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm not saying 100% of the time. I'm not even trying to imply that. Sometimes people are just going to not agree on things, and that's fine. But most of the time, what I've seen in my own experience over the last few years is just somebody misunderstood somebody else, and then things got ugly. And if that happens a few times for a never-end, for somebody who's just offering support from the outside, it can get discouraged. You know, it can be discouraging. It can be. It's a little... you know, I didn't want to just jump into this analogy, but it's a little bit sometimes like that rabid dog thing where you want to help the dog, but the dog's going to bite you no matter what you do.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Yeah,
you know
yeah.
What I mean?
Yeah. I do.
You know, you're a good person. You want to help, but there's, you know, there's the rabid dog, you know? So, you know, we're not all rabid dogs. That's why it's not a really great analogy.
Right.
All that way. But some of us are, you know? And some of us get moods, and we have our good days, and we have our bad days, and so that's the vagaries, I guess, of people, you know, of trying to offer support and help. But I you know, want to kind of, having said all of that, the most important thing for anyone outside groups to know, help is wanted, is appreciated, it is needed. You know, the support is needed and wanted. It's just that it might be, you know, sometimes a bit more than you thought you were going to be fighting off, you know. So that's,
right.
I guess, the best thing I could kind of...
I've said this before.
I see that situation.
I said this a couple times before, and I wish there was, but there's no instruction manual for this. There's no guide.
No, and we are hampered by that. You know, academics, social scientists have done some work on this. There's some out there, but you know, you find out quickly when you start diving into that academics, like anybody, are people too, and they have their misunderstandings and errors and apologetics and all that. And so, it would be nice if there was a field guide.
Yeah.
You know, people are still trying to figure this stuff out. You know, they're still trying to figure out what are the models of behavior, how and belief, and how does this stuff work, and why do people, you know, respond to stuff, and some people do and some people don't, and how do you recover from a group like this? Again, very individual, very different. You know, I know veteran Sea Org members who were in for over 20 years who got away, and they're fine, they're just fine. And I know other veterans who are members who got away, and they are a mess. They're just a mess, you know? So it really depends on the individual and what gifts they're bringing to the picture as to what you're going to deal with.
All good information. I think that's very helpful.
Yeah.
We talk about these stupid questions and the questions asked. You ask answer questions regularly on your Q&A sessions. Often you skip questions. What are the, if you could just give us a little peek behind the curtain, what are some of the kinds of questions that you absolutely will not answer?
Oh, well, derogatory questions, of course. I don't really get into, you know, questions that are going to end up insulting people.
Right.
Sometimes I am asked questions that are obviously partisan and trying to take sides, pit me against a critic, that kind of thing. I don't go in for that. And general questions that are way too generalized, or, you know, what is Scientology, right? Well, what was L. Ron Hubbard's problem? Kind of question.
Like, how are you going to answer that?
Yeah, exactly. What am I supposed to do with this? So I sort of filter all that stuff out, and I try to find things that are, you know, I have a whole queue of this text file, and I copy every question people ask me, whether it's by email or through the comment sections of my videos, and I keep it all in a file, and I go through it, and I'm always looking for, you know, different type questions, you know, more intelligent questions. You know, I've done, I think, 140-something videos of critical Q&A.
Over,
right?
Yeah.
And every episode I answer 8 to 9 to 10 questions. So I've answered a lot of questions.
Right.
It's really hard to make every one of those questions unique. I try to repeat myself. So I've covered a lot of territory already. So I really look for things that will either be a unique question that's different than I've been asked before, or a question that is asked about something that offers a particularly unique insight into thing that maybe has been covered before, that aspect of it hasn't covered before, right? Or that particular angle or view on it hasn't been covered before. And I love that stuff. And sometimes people ask me, amazingly insightful question that just the question itself has gotten me thinking and cogitating and going, oh, wow, what a great way of looking at that. I'd never thought about that before. I love those kind of questions.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It keeps it interesting for sure. One of the things that happened in recent history, like right before the new year, I think, that encouraged me to want to have you back on the show. I mean, I could always have you on the show. We could probably always find something to talk about. But the thing was, you made a comment on a video about how you were kind of, it's kind of like a change in philosophy about excusing Scientologists for not knowing that they're in a cult based on the amount of internet access there is and what they can find. Do you want to elaborate on that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, that was an important point. That was a bit of a turning point for me because I realized one day, and this is part of my own little process, and everybody doesn't have to realize this, it was just my thing, but I went from looking at Scientologists as postal victims to starting to look at, take a more, I felt, a more intellectually honest look at what are the, you know, what are their responsibilities in regards to being part of this, right?
Right.
You know, because obviously when I first got out of Scientology and learned the things about it that I did know when I was in, I thought, no, L. Ron Hubbard's history, his real history, said a completely bogus fantasy about his life. I did not know about his multiple marriages, this sort of thing. I did not have it in my head that David Miscavige was beating up his staff. You know, there were lots of things about the subject that I didn't understand, didn't have the knowledge of.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked at that and I thought, okay, I have been lied to, I've been deceived, purposefully, blatantly, over and repeatedly, over all these years. And so, from that point of view, I went, wow, I've been victimized, right? And I didn't want to think of myself as a victim particularly, because even that a stigma connected to it.
Right.
So it took me a long time to get to the point where I could look at how I was victimized. And I was. There's no question about it. I mean, it's just my definition of it.
Right.
So I then talked about Scientology from the point of view of how they victimize people. And that's an important conversation to have because they do that. That happens every single day. Ever.
You think it's still happening?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, there's still the Sea Org. There's still abusive scheduling. There's still abusive behavior going on. There's still people being physically assaulted and stuff. But I'm absolutely positive that stuff still goes on.
Well, at least the RPF is gone. So, you know.
Well, and if it is, that's great.
But
the RPF is not, by any stretch of the imagination, the only thing that goes on in Scientology.
Right.
Abusive. You know what I mean?
You know, Chris, the more I talk to you guys, the more I find out that slave labor begins before you even get assigned to RPF, so it's just unimaginable to me.
Oh, absolutely. The entire Sea Org is slave labor.
Right.
Oh, without question. I mean, there's not even, like, this isn't even, as far as I'm concerned, this isn't even a questionable point. I mean, you're drawing people in on extremely false pretenses, giving them a whole song and dance about how they're going to save the world. And every single person who joins the Sea Org did get that song and dance, and that almost universally is why they joined.
That's a beautiful
and
facility. They got a pool.
You feed them substandard food. You run them rigorously on an insanely abusive schedule. You deny them sleep. You deny them adequate rest, mm-hmm. adequate food. You are abusive towards them in almost every way imaginable. I mean, that's not, you know, kind of modern slavery. I don't know what it is. So that's kind of, you know, how I was looking at this for a long time.
Right.
But it started dawning on me after a couple of years that when it started becoming clearer to me what I mentioned earlier in the show here about the abusive relationship aspect of it and how it requires both ends. You know, it's not just some guy on a street corner dishing out abuse. You have to follow that person. In order to follow that person, you have to agree to follow that person. You got to sign up. You got to be part of it. And you have to stay involved. Because objectively speaking, at any point along the line, you can turn around and get up and walk away. I mean, theoretically, at least.
Right, right.
So that, you know, that physical, you know, that kind of is a reality that we need to acknowledge.
It was a bit of a shock to me.
That goes in a direction then of having to look at what's the responsibility of the followers.
Right.
You know, now some people will go, and again, I think take this to an extreme of, you know, they're the ones who are fully responsible. It's not on the cult leader at all, which is nonsense.
Right.
Or they have no responsibility. They're complete victims and were totally victimized and they had no responsibility for anything that happened. Well, that's not true either. Right? And getting that balance is kind of finding that middle ground where possibly the more objective truth lies, but it's a difficult conversation. You don't want to tell somebody who's a victim of spousal abuse, let's say, well, you murdered them.
right?
That doesn't help anybody, right? So that's not the attitude I'm talking about.
Good. I'm glad you said that.
That's not what we're talking about at all, right? What I'm saying is that you get to a place where you kind of go, well, yeah, I could have done it here, I could have done this differently, or that kind of thing. Without getting into hindsight bias, which I talked about a little bit in the video, you know, you can't know then what you know now.
Right.
You made the best decisions you could make at the time. So it's a little bit of a line I'm talking about here when you start talking about the responsibility of the people who were victimized.
Right.
I want to make that out to further victimize them. That's not my point at all, right?
Yeah, that's what I was...
Don't want to go anywhere near that.
That's what I was going to ask you. Is there a pause for that? Because, you know, it may be easier for you to say that now, is what you're saying.
Basically, that's exactly what I'm saying. But it's, you know, everybody has to come to this themselves. I'm not trying to force my views on other people, and so just because I can see it that way means everybody else has to see it that way. But I do encourage people to come out of extremist thinking, where it's all or nothing, black and white. I was a total victim, and I didn't have anything to do with it. Well, okay. You know,
right.
I think that might be as wrong as, you were 100% responsible for everything that happened to you, which is, by the way, what Scientology tells you. Right? That's not true at all.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's an individual thing. Every single individual needs to kind of deal with that on their own terms.
Well, it feels like this came full circle because it goes back to what we talked about in the beginning, and that is even I, in my adulthood, in recent times, have followed the crowd in a way that I would look back and went, oh my God, why did I do that? You made excuses for why this wasn't as bad as it was.
Yes, that's right. We all do it. The fact that we do that is one of the reasons we have this.
Right. It's just human nature.
It's the way we think.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's human nature. It's not, you know, a cultic system is a system of somebody or a group of people taking advantage of the way people think to have undue influence, power, control over them. So you look at the techniques that they use, and when you drill down into how those techniques work, you come to find, well, they work because we can't think any other way than the way we think. Our thinking isn't wonderful sometimes. It's the way we go about coming to decisions and is not so rational all the time. We're very emotionally driven. You know, that sort of thing is what I'm talking about. So,
right.
So it's, you know, there's no 100% proof that you can do, you know, that you can proof somebody up that they'll never fall victim to undue influence or cult tactics or technique.
Fully agree.
Because we can't change how we think.
Right.
We can't change how we are, how our nature is. You know, it just kind of comes down to that. So all we can really do is educate ourselves, and go through the school of hard knocks, and go, okay, well, it happened to me once, it doesn't happen, have to happen to me twice, and try to learn from the experience of our own experience and the experience of others. But even being as fully armed as we can with all the logical fallacies and all the rhetoric and all the reasoning abilities and skills and education you can get, we're still going to fall for stuff. Now,
yep.
There's no way around it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. This has been a great conversation. I thank you for doing this, Chris.
Absolutely.
What I normally do at the end is 10 questions. Of course, we've already done that, so I'm going to do something different today with you. It's five of these. These are word association, except instead of one word, you'll give three word association.
Oh, okay.
So the three words that you say, that way you don't get stuck on one word. I figure, hey, why not?
Okay. Yeah, sure.
So word association with Chris Shelton, number one, RPF.
Horror fest, abuse, rigorous.
Very fair. Number two,
yeah.
Disconnection.
Shunning, emotional blackmail, horrible.
I think I don't know if it gets any more descriptive than that. Number three, I figure you might have fun with this one. David Miscavige.
Tyrant, dictator, asshole.
You need like 18 word association on this one, right?
Oh my god, I could go on for a while on that one, yeah.
Number four, fast food.
Oh gosh, McDonald's, Burger King, Wendy's.
That's just what comes to mind in that order. Okay. All right, then. Number five, last one. Star Wars The Last Jedi.
Disappointing, confusing, stunning.
Did you say stunning at the end?
I was okay with how things came together on the storyline, but I was not really happy with the journey on that one.
Well,
I thought it really missed the mark in a number of ways.
Well, you know, there's arguments for that, and that's a whole other podcast probably to talk about that, to break that down.
No, I fully understand that. People can have whatever views they want. I don't care. I'm not going to start calling people Star Wars tards or something if they don't agree with me on that one. But I'm old school. I grew up with Star Wars. For me, it's my childhood, that sort of thing.
Are you a canon nerd? Like, you need to have that canon?
Big part of my childhood. What was that?
Are you a canon nerd? The stories that got cut out, are you upset about all that?
I am upset about, yeah. I don't know that I'm a canon nerd. I don't know that I know all the canon. I know the movies.
Right.
My experience of Star Wars was the movies. And I am disappointed in the direction that the last movie went, and it's out of my hands, it's in Disney's hands, and whatever. So that's just my
crapshoot
as watcher, as a Star Wars buff all my life. I wouldn't have made the decisions they made. But
I'm terribly obnoxious about this. I can make an explanation for everything that was wrong with it, but we'll have that talk later. the only thing I can't explain away in all the movies is Jar Jar Binks, and then that's that's what I can't explain.
That was pure evil on Lucas's part. He is not a particularly great storyteller in a number of ways. And he's very derivative in a number of ways. But Jar Jar Binks was, I guess, his effort at originality, and it was a disaster from the first frame.
All right, well, there you go. That's a fair assessment for Chris Shelton. Yeah. Thank you again for coming on the show, and I hope we get to talk again sometime soon.
Cool, man. All right, thanks for having me.
All right, so that was Chris Shelton. Of course, you can follow his YouTube videos. I put a link to his YouTube channel where he does sensibly speaking. He's talked to lots of people in there. He also does his Q&A sessions that we spoke about during the interview. You also can get a lot more answers from him in his book, A to Xenu, which can be found on Amazon and other places you can buy books. that was a real helpful conversation for me, even listening back just now. I'm glad we had that talk. I thank Chris Shelton once again for coming on and doing that, and I hope it helps some of you at home listening as well. In the meantime, I am taking a little break. It might be 3 weeks, might be a month. I am planning more, bringing more people's stories to you, more exposure of Scientology, and hopefully we can use this next 3 to 4 weeks to catch up on the podcast. I'll keep bugging you guys with links. Until then, stay connected. That about sums it up. Take care, guys.
If I speak for your followers, and I speak for your ex-followers, and I speak for the curious outsiders looking in, and you remain silent in the shadows and don't let your balls drop enough to come out and say something, then I say, who do you speak for, Mr. Miscavige?
Anything on earth that says, don't listen to your mom and dad, don't talk to your mom and dad, that's bad.
Yeah,
wrong.
I remember sitting there wishing I could just scream out loud and beg for help. But I knew if I did that, I would never see Mark again.
This is the thing about real life. You can't experience the great thing without the bad thing.
I felt like it would probably be better off if we didn't exist. And, came up with a plan on how to end it.
He talks about a 7-year-old child. Even if he's referring to actually an adult. So let's say we change that to an adult. Okay, the woman shudders because the man hits her even passionately. The fact is that she shudders.
You do a big apology to me and give me my kids back.
I'm still shocked by the evil. Yes, even to this day, when I see a video of a former friend or family member, I'm like, this is pure evil at work.